Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Welcome, everybody, to CRE Radio and TV. This is an audio-only podcast, and today we're going to be talking about the Federal Reserve Board, who recently increased interest rates. And my special guest is David Pascal. He's the Senior Vice President of George Smith Partners. David, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It's great. Glad to have you. I've been following you for quite some time, and I'm really grateful that you're going to explain what just happened with the interest rates. Now, I understand that this is Janet Yellen's last board meeting as the she's the chairman or chairwoman of the Federal Reserve Board. And
that's right.
And they recently today increased the federal interest rate that they charge to banks. Why don't you tell us what they did and then maybe talk a little bit about what the factors were that they considered?
Okay. You know, the Federal Reserve has control of the short-term interest rate, kind of the overnight rate that they charge to banks. And that interest rate was put at basically 0% in the wake of the financial crisis in 2008 and remained so all the way until December 2015 when they raised that rate 0.25% and they felt that the time was right to start raising rates, which is a twofold issue. One is it shows confidence in the economy that it doesn't need the ultra low accommodative policy of the like I said, the ultra low rates, and it also is meant to show that they're trying to rein in inflation. They then raised the rate one time in 2016, and they've raised it three times in 2017. So right now, the rate stands at 1.5%, because every time they raise it 0.25%. So there have been six raises, you know, which is 1.5% worth of rate raises, and so we're now at 1.5% on what they call the overnight rate. And what's interesting is how it affects the 10-year treasury, which is what, you know, in our business, which is where most of our loans are priced off of, and also how it affects LIBOR, which is how many of the floating rate loans are priced off of. And I would add that the 10-year is for fixed rate loans, but it is the standard term and index for fixed rate lending. The Fed rate absolutely affects LIBOR. LIBOR virtually moves in lockstep with the Fed in normal conditions outside of a credit crisis. And, you know, we've seen LIBOR move pretty much in lockstep. Sometimes it moves a little in anticipation of the move, like today's move was highly telegraphed. And the 10-year treasury is more a prediction of where the markets think growth and inflation are going in the future. And in fact, the 10-year actually dropped a little bit today from 240 to 234.
Now, what does all that mean to someone who owns commercial real property or even someone who's looking to buy a home?
Right. Well, the long-term rates, which affect most home mortgages, because most home mortgages are fixed these days, and stabilized properties, are most of those borrowers are watching the 10-year Treasury. Interestingly, the 2-year Treasury moves more rapidly. It reacts more rapidly to the Fed move. And so what the Fed is also watching is, you know, where inflation is and where growth is. And also there's supply and demand dynamics in, you know, with the Treasury as far as how big our deficits are. That doesn't seem to be, I'll do a quick aside here. The markets don't seem to be that concerned about the deficits, and a lot of that has to do with the relative yield of a 10-year Treasury as opposed to a German bond or European bonds of the strong countries out there that are trading at much lower yields. So I'll just leave that for a future podcast. You know, we could talk more about that.
Well, so, let me ask you this question. Let's say I'm looking to spend $20 million to buy a income producing property. How might this affect me?
As of now, if you're buying a property that is stabilized, you're probably going to put 10-year financing on it. You know, it could be Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, could be a CMBS loan, which is what we call a conduit loan, or even a fixed-rate bank loan. And that index is tied more to inflation and inflation expectations. So today it has been trading in a very tight range for months, probably between about 220 and 240, and today it sits at 234. Average spreads are maybe, you know, 200 over, you know, so call it 430 on a, that would be your rate on a 10-year loan today, and maybe a little lower in the 4% range for lower leverage and high quality, maybe a little higher for some, you know, higher leverage and maybe some lower quality stuff. So you might be in the, 450 range with a 30-year amortization. And going back to why the Fed is so concerned about inflation and watching it so closely is because the big fear that all central bankers have is deflation. And so when inflation is very low, the Fed's preferred inflation target right now is about 1.4 to 1.6% annually. That's called the personal consumption index. And if we get into a deflationary spiral, prices drop and people don't buy things on it because they believe that the price will drop more and our consumer based economy could go into a crisis, and it's called a deflationary spiral. And so the banks are very wary of keeping rates low enough to avoid deflation. And Europe became very close to deflation in the last few years with some of their issues, and their central bank has engaged in some very accommodative bond buying, et cetera. And you know, the United States index, you know, was at one, you know, during the early years of the recovery, sometimes hovered in the 1% range, and there was some concern about deflation. So that is why the Fed wants inflation. And of course, you know, like you were saying, Howard, is back in the 80s, you know, inflation was rampant and a complete nightmare, you know, as it, you know, it hit 15%, 16%, 17%.
Oh, yeah. That became, well, the whole bottom line is, you know, if there's inflation, then your dollar doesn't buy as much.
Right. And if there is price inflation and no wage inflation, then the standard of living for the average, you know, consumer citizen in America is in danger. And the Fed's mandate, and this is something important to keep in mind, the Fed's mandate is to keep economic conditions favorable to, you know, the average American. And that is really something I believe Yellen, you know, was very, very clear on, because her preferred gauge of prices was wage inflation. And the lack of wage inflation over the past few years has really almost like, not bedeviled her, but it has concerned her very much, because the Fed believes their mandate is to, you know, keep our economy strong, but also make sure that the quality of life for the average American is getting better. Now, why aren't wages increasing? A lot of it has to do with technology, aging workforce, demographic trends, and, you know, the lack of, you know, the decreasing influence of trade unions that we remember were so powerful in the 70s and 80s and have kind of lost their way. The new economy is very much a gig economy. And with companies having trouble raising prices on their goods, we're not seeing a lot of wage inflation. And when wage inflation does tick up, you will definitely see the Fed move quickly, maybe quicker than we have seen before on rates.
Yes, one of the things that she was talking about was she had indicated that the job market remains strong, and they anticipate that it'll remain strong for years ahead. But for wages, there was just going to be a modest upward pressure. What did she mean by that?
What she means is that the issue that she's talking about is really interesting, because people her age, you know, maybe my age, remember that the old model was, when employment was full, you know, and full employment is considered a 4% unemployment rate. When you're at a 3% unemployment rate, it's almost overheated, because there's always a group that is not in the workforce or in not efficiently searching for jobs. So in the old days, when there was that much employment, supply-demand dynamics would take over and wages would start to shoot up. So in this case, the Fed has kept rates low. Employment is at a maximum at 4.1, 4.0 by some measures, and wages are stubbornly flat. And it shows that we are in what one of the great thinkers of our time, a gentleman by the name of Mohammed El Arian, who now works for Allianz and was PIMCO's chief strategist for many years, and he's on Bloomberg and CNBC all the time, and he has actually talked about as a future Fed governor himself. What he has called our post-crisis economy is the new normal, where the old rules don't apply. So, you know, what some analysts are talking about, in fact, I saw a JP Morgan report today that was fascinating, is that the Fed is concentrating on the wrong thing. Instead of watching for wage inflation and waiting to raise rates when wages go up, they should be watching asset inflation, which is, you know, bubble danger in housing, treasuries, corporate bonds, stocks, you know, equities, etc. But you know, the old school thinking of the Fed is they don't want to raise rates too quickly and nip, you know, wage inflation in the bud.
Yeah, I think the way I perceive the way that the Fed acts is that they're looking for modest changes. They're looking for balance, nothing too drastic, because that affects people's lives a little bit too much. And I think that's the way that they look at it.
They raised rates three times this year. And what's an interesting note, and what you're talking about is what a lot of people call the Goldilocks effect. Not too hot, not too cold. You don't want to overheat the economy, and you don't want to stop the economy. And, you know, and some, and there's always many opinions out there, as I said, that some people think that there's a, that assets are becoming overheated and the Fed should move quicker. Some say that the Fed shouldn't move at all. In fact, two governors today, including Kashkarian, who's a gaming theorist and is a real forward thinker. He actually worked some of the models on the TARP for the TARP legislation in 2008. He was a protege of Tim Geithner. They voted for no increase today, so they want to see wages move up a little. So we're at, you know, it's like the question is, where are we going? And where we're going is, you know, in the new normal, is what's the neutral rate? That's what the term is. And Yellen has said that the neutral rate is about 2.75 to 2.8. Now, keep in mind, a couple years ago, they thought the neutral rate was 3.25. Meaning that that's where they're headed to, and going above that would be foolish. Of course, unless we saw, you know, rapid inflation, then they would go above that. So what does that mean? So we're predicting, you know, four or five more increases. And they have said that there's maybe three increases on tap for 2018. And the markets, the futures markets, think there are two. And then they think maybe two or three the following year. And, you know, and we'll see at that point. The neutral rate is the ultimate Goldilocks moment. That's when the Fed will say, we're at where we should be after the crisis. And a lot of it is learning as what the lasting effects of the crisis are. And, you know, and to digress a little bit, but to talk about something that everyone in our audience knows, who orders from Amazon out there, everyone, I'm sure that you know, my son is 12 years old. He knows how to order from Amazon, of course, using my account. But, you know, 40 cents of every dollar online shopping goes to Amazon. Amazon has one of the most sophisticated pricing systems out there, and they will undercut brick and mortar stores in order to, you know, grow their business effectively. Guys my age, and I'll say how old I am. I'm 58 years old. I remember my dad or my mom looking in the newspaper and comparing prices. And I remember my dad buying tires and driving to one store and then driving to the other store and asking the price. You think about how inefficient that was. Now people are seeing, you know, there are price programs on everyone's smartphone. So why do I bring this up? It is holding down inflation. There is manufacturers, sellers do not have the pricing power that they did. And this Amazon effect is keeping inflation down. There's no doubt about that. And central bankers that were raised and went to college in the 70s or 60s at the University of Chicago or some of the great thinkers are rethinking the model now? What do we do? When, if ever, will these, you know, manufacturers be able to raise prices? Not only is it the Amazon effect, but there's so many goods and services providers now that people have access to. Of course, when you grew up in a regular town in America, you know, maybe there were six department stores within driving distance. It's now 1,000, you know, within online distance. So it's, you know, there's a lot of changes, technology based, that are affecting inflation and central bank policy.
It just let me ask you another question, because someone asked her a question about tax policy. Within just the last hour and a half, 2 hours maximum, it was announced that both the Senate and House have come to pretty much an agreement on a tax proposal where they've worked out their differences. And Janet Yellen was asked a question about how tax policy is going to affect the federal funds rate. And her statement was that at this point in time, it's highly uncertain what the tax policy will have on the economy. Do you have any comments with regard to that and how any of that may, and I don't think you need to know, you know, specifically what the terms of the tax bill will be, other than the fact that, you know, there's some concern that the tax policy will have an effect on the economy.
Yes, it's a very large bill, and it affects all swaths of the economy. And for example, you're going to have big corporate tax cuts. What are corporations going to do with that money? And it really comes down to some existential questions, like how does tax policy affect behavior, corporate behavior and individual behavior? People aren't robots that you can just move a lever in Washington and everyone does this. Different companies might repatriate overseas money, and they might do stock buybacks. Some might invest in robots, because, you know, and so that's not going to help the average Joe, you know, if I can use that term, the average person. But some might hire more, and some might raise wages. That's what the hope is. And some, so it might have some stimulative effects. And so we're looking for those effects. On a side note, we noticed, you know, there was some issues with California, New York, and New Jersey, and this is very important, where, you know, there was going to be less deductions for local, state, and local taxes. Now, that'll affect the bottom line spendable income of, you know, a lot of the highest earners in the country. And no, I said just named three states, but California has about 1/10 of the entire country's population. When you add New York and New Jersey, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, it's a significant amount of the population, a significant amount of the high earners, and, you know, a lot of the drivers of our economy. So we're watching that, and I heard that I just noticed that they put in a $10,000 deduction for property taxes and income taxes combined to soften that blow. And then what Janet Yellen, Fed Chair Yellen, that's how we usually refer to her as, her official title, what she also noted is supply and demand of treasuries. Now, there's been a lot of controversy. Will this pay for itself, this tax cut? You know, using something called dynamic scoring. And there's a consensus among the cold and the analytics that it will not, that it will drive the deficit up about $1 trillion.
Right.
There's some political, and I don't want to get into politics here, but, you know, some of the tax cut champions are saying, no, it'll be revenue neutral. We'll see. If it isn't, and there's more treasuries being sold because of higher deficits, aging baby boomers, more Medicare dollars having to go out. You know, we always know the defense always goes up. We're talking about the three biggest pieces of the economy. If I say, you know, Social Security, Medicare, defense, interest on the debt. And if there's more treasuries out there, interest rates might go up. Then you'll see the 10-year really move up. So, you know, all this is TBD, to be determined, and it'll be very, very interesting. If inflation picks up because of this, you'll see them slow down the rate increases. If inflation shoots way up, you might even see rate decreases. And what I say in my column a lot, that ever since the crisis, we're in uncharted territory. We've never seen an economy with 0% rates worldwide for 7 years, and growth, anemic growth compared to pre-crash of 1 to 2% worldwide. You know, our administration is now predicting 2.9 to 3% GDP for the next 5 years. Let's see how that goes.
Well, interestingly enough, one of the questions that was asked of her right at the end of the comment period was that there were some people expecting or suggesting that there's going to be a 4% growth with the tax cuts. And her comment was that that would be challenging to achieve.
Yes.
Do you have any comments on that?
I agree with her. 4% growth has not been seen since some of our heydays of the late 90s, you know, one or two years, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but that's like, you know, when we talk about the modern economy, we start with, you know, World War II as a defining moment. Post World War II, that's when all, you know, the Roosevelt policies went into effect, and, you know, the American economy really turned on. You know, that was the, you know, if you talk about the heyday, call it 1946 to 1973, the great era of American expansion and infrastructure, there was some 4% growth then. It'd be very difficult to see that now, in an era where we just, like I say, had a huge stimulus, bond buying, 0% rates, accommodative policy, tax cuts, you know, still remaining from the Bush era, and, you know, and growth, you know, GDP at 1.1-1.5%. To see it go up to 4 would be amazing, and I think it's would be quite unexpected.
One last question. If you had a crystal ball over the next 2 years, what do you expect?
I would expect, my prediction, and maybe you and I will play this in 2 years, Howard, you know, just, you
and
know, and we'll mark the date. Maybe we'll laugh. Maybe we'll cry or, but okay. So I see 2 increases next year. I see not much wage inflation, and maybe, you know, I see growth rates 2.2 to 2.4% at best. You know, we don't know if there will be a, as we always say, a black swan event, that, you know, like the Chinese renminbi crisis a couple years ago. You know, I see, you know, pretty steady growth. 1 or 2 Fed increases per year, and I see a couple more years of what I call Goldilocks, but I don't see any rapid growth or rapid inflation. You know, I watch oil prices very closely, and no one sees, you know, oil hitting $100 a barrel there's just so much supply out there and changing dynamics in that market. And I think it's a major component of inflation. So that's what I see. I'm watching the end of LIBOR. That would be another podcast, you know, as we're winding down LIBOR, which, by the way, is the benchmark for a quarter quadrillion. That's like $300 trillion worth of derivatives out there. And it's going to end in 2021, and we're going to transition over the next few years to some new benchmarks, and it won't be a worldwide benchmark. And so I think this is a major crystal ball item that, you know, what will be the effect as we get to 2020, as Britain's going to have their own index called SONIA, the U.S. is going to use a Fed funds overnight rate. That'll be interesting to watch.
Great. Well, we're going to have to wrap this up, David.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We will provide on our podcast how to get a hold of David at George Smith Partners. And Thank you very much. This is Howard Klein with CRE Radio and TV. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Howard.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Via email to questions@CREradio.com or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.